Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and I am joined by my partner, Jeff Reinbold. Jeff, the long wait is over. It's here. Week one is upon us. The NFL season is about to kick off.
Man, I'm going to tell you something, and you talk about a crazy week in college football, but that's just the appetizer for the NFL. But Neil, I got to tell you, if you are a team that needs a quarterback, right? If you need a quarterback, there's a kid at UCLA that, boy, oh boy, I'm going to tell you something. He's got the look of a great one. This Rosen kid at UCLA brought his team back from, I don't know, it was like 31 points down with 17 minutes left to go in the game. And I'm going to tell you something, a la Dan Marino, fake spike, touchdown pass with 3 seconds left to go to win the game. I was unbelievable. Kid special.
So they start the college football season, and he pulls off a Tom Brady and a Dan Marino impression in 17 minutes. Not bad.
I'm going to tell you something, man. It was just eerily reminiscent of the Super Bowl because, I mean, just a total domination by Texas A&M at the start of the game. It's 31-3 at halftime here. And UCLA's at home in the Rose Bowl. People are walking out of this day. I mean, it was just like the Super Bowl. And then all of a sudden, here they came. And that young quarterback, and he's getting hit and harassed. But I'm telling you what, that kid has a chance. I think he is really, really impressive. I was told he was one of the good ones. He and the kid from USC were probably Sam Darnold was probably the best too. But I'm gonna tell you something, man. You gotta watch this young kid. If your team needs a quarterback, watch this Rosen kid from UCLA.
All right, we'll keep an eye on Josh Rosen, and one of the teams that might be in the market to get him could be the New York Jets come the end of the season, because they made a big trade during the final cutdown. Let's talk about Sheldon Richardson then to Seattle from the New York Jets. The Jermaine Kearse, the wide receiver, goes the other direction, and Sheldon Richardson now gives the Seahawks 8 Pro Bowlers on defense. And Jeff, he's a little bit out there sometimes. He's a little bit wacky. He's a little bit outspoken. He's going to fit right in, isn't he?
I was going to say, he's going to have to find a seat on the bus, because you talk about some guys on defense that are outspoken and a little bit wacky. You can go from front to back on that defense, and they got them at every level of the defense. But if he's going to a place, you know, in the league, Sheldon Richardson, that personality, that guy, if he's going to any place in the league, Seattle's the perfect place for him, because it's a place where you can be who you want to be and you can say what you want to say as long as you play. And you do it the way Pete wants it done, which is to go out there and compete every day. He wants guys to be who they are. And I think that this will be a great opportunity for Sheldon Richardson to play in an environment that is conducive to his personality. You think about it, Neil, and now where is their weakness on that defense? I mean, you go to pass rush downs, and you've got Sheldon Richardson, and you've got Michael Bennett. I mean, I'm going to tell you something now. It's going to be tough. That pocket is going to collapse on a lot of quarterbacks real fast. You know, again, the teams that play Seattle are going to feel it really quickly.
Jeff, tell us about, obviously, from a defensive coach's point of view, when you get those big guys, I always think, looking at it not as a coach, you want enough of them that you can kind of rotate them in and keep them fresh, but also you want to be able to move them along the line. And you see that with Michael Bennett. Sometimes he's a defensive end, and sometimes he's a pass rushing defensive tackle. With Sheldon Richardson, he's kind of listed as a defensive tackle, but he also plays as a big 3-4 defensive end at times, certainly did with the Jets. Does he give you that flexibility, and how are you seeing him kind of fit into this defense?
Well, I think the thing when you look at the defensive lineman, one of the things you want is what we call position flexibility. Mm. And what that means is the ability, as you said, with Michael Bennett, to be able to play all of the positions, whether that's the wide nine where you're out rushing on air, it's the 6-eye, which is playing inside the tight end and playing the C gap. it's playing the over tackle, which is the, and again, as I'm using some football terminology, but the two over the three technique, which is outside the guard, or go all the way inside and sink down in the A gap and play off the center. So the reason that you want that, Neil, from a coaching standpoint, is now you can, it's basically chess. You can now put your knight against their pawn, if you will. So, for example, you've got a great pass rusher. Well, you can move him anywhere along the line to get the matchup that you want, because here's where I think there's a real significant advantage for the defensive coaches, and not everybody uses it, frankly, but one of the significant advantages is when you have a guy like Michael Bennett, you have a guy like Sheldon Richardson, they can't hide where their weak link is. You can't just line up a, let's say you got a bad right guard. Mm. Well, you can't line him up and say, okay, well, you go play right tackle because Bennett's lined up over you, or you go play left tackle because Bennett's lined up over you. He has to be the right guard. Mm. And so what happens is you can rotate your players to get your best against their worst, and that's just the matchups that you look for.
I certainly look forward to seeing Sheldon Richardson and that Seattle defense in week one. They're at Green Bay at Lambeau Field. We'll talk about that in a little while, because we will be making our picks, Jeff, for week one. So just giving you the heads up there. Picks will be made on this podcast. What else have we got trade-wise? So this is a big one. Jacoby Brissett, the quarterback for the New England Patriots, goes to the Indianapolis Colts for Philip Dorsett. Let's first of all look at the timing of it, Jeff, because I like the move, and I think it makes sense if Andrew Luck's got an injury, and we know, but we kind of knew Andrew Luck had an injury all off season, and that it was looking like it was healing slowly and developing slowly. I like the move, but I scratch my head over the timing, because Jacoby Brissett is not ready to face the LA Rams in week one, so Scott Tolzien gets the nod. What's your thoughts on this move?
Well, I think that here's the thing we got to remember. You can't make a trade when you want to make a trade. A trade has to be a mutual agreement between both clubs. So if, for example, you know, the guy, Jacoby Brissett's not on the market, well, you can't make that trade. You can float a guy out there. You can get the idea out there. And I think, you know, Neil, this is interesting. This is the most, there's over, it's hovering right at 20 trades have been made at the cutdown time, you know, within days of the final cut. That's the most since 2000. Mm. And I think this was reflective of a new way of doing business amongst these young general managers that are now in the league. People are more open to trade. And I think this Brissett trade is good for both teams. I think, you know, you look at the Patriots, and obviously they know Jacoby Brissett is going to only be a backup for them in, you know, in the near future. And they need speed. I think, you know, you look at Dorsett, he's a guy that can run 4.29 and 4.3 and gives a vertical threat to the Patriot offense and a punt returner. And then again, if you're the Colts, you know, like Scott Tolzien, let's just be honest, he's not good enough to win with in the National Football League on a consistent basis. Brissett has shown flashes that he can be. So good trade for both teams.
Jeff, if I'm a Colts fan, do I worry that this sends the message that it looks like Andrew Luck might be out for an extended period of time?
No, I just think it's Chris Ballard doing a good job of helping to get a prospect at a position where it's hard to find guys. You know, I mean, you know, we talk all the time about the importance of, you know, quarterback play. And again, is Jacoby Brissett going to be a guy that can take you to the Super Bowl? I don't think so. But again, is he better than what you have? I believe that's the case. And so the Colts have bettered themselves. And, you know, let's be honest, as much as we both love Luck, he's been on the shelf an awful lot. He's been hit an awful lot in his young career. So having a backup who, you know, is an upgrade for you, I think is a great move by Chris Ballard and the Colts.
Yeah, Andrew Luck has missed significant time with the Colts. He missed a game last year with a concussion, 7 games with internal stomach injuries in 2015, and 2 games that year with a shoulder injury. He's missed 10 over the past 2 seasons, so those things are starting to add up. It's going to be interesting how the Patriots use Dorsett, Jeff, because he never reached his potential in Indianapolis, but he, as you mentioned just then, he's another stretch the field kind of guy. So suddenly the Patriots have gone from, you know, we always talk about how they can attack you horizontally and they can get all those Rob Roots that you talk about, but now they've got Brandon Cooks, they've got Philip Dorsett. I mean, Chris Hogan was getting downfield on the Pittsburgh Steelers in the AFC Championship game. If Tom Brady's arm is up to kind of stretch in the field, he's got the weapons to do that.
Yeah, he's got the weapons. Now, I will qualify that, Neil, with, you know, when I was down with the Dolphins, their head of football research showed me a graphic that over 70% of all the balls caught in the NFL last year, over 70% were passes of 9 yards or shorter.
Yep.
But just the threat of a guy like Philip Dorsett does an awful lot for your offense, because you think about if they move Hogan inside, which is where we think he's going to start to see more playing time, and then you've got Gronk underneath. Now you've got guys outside that can blow the top off the coverage, and if you're going to play all the coverages that we've seen against the Patriots where they try and double underneath and single outside, well, now they've got guys that can just get up over the top of you. And, you know, I'm going to tell you something, that scares defensive coordinators. You're not going to see the middle of the field open when you've got guys like Philip Dorsett that can run the way he can.
Jeff, it's fascinating that stat you've given, because I'd seen something similar at the back end of last year when I was doing some research for the playoffs. And, you know, most passes that quarterbacks throw across the league, whoever you're looking at, it's in that 0 to 10 yard range when they break it down. But then come NFL combine day, we're kind of looking, or pro workouts days, we're seeing these guys launch 80 yard passes downfield, and we're all sitting there saying, wow. But surely it's that arm strength is there to show that you can do it on short passes and put it in the right place and make the right decisions.
Yeah, you know what, and that's why a lot of, when you talk to the really good quarterback coaches, Neil, the thing they talk about all the time isn't you know, what they, you know, what's described now, the term that everybody uses now is arm talent. Well, it's not about the big arm. It's about your ability to make decisions and be accurate, because the reality of it is that most of the throws you're going to make are going to be in that range. I mean, that's league-wide, Neil, across, that's every pass thrown in the National Football League last year. Everyone, over 70% are 9 yards or shorter. So then the reality of it is, too, that the pass rushers now are so good that you can't hold the ball to get those, what we call arc passes, those balls that aren't on a line, that you've got to arc it and let a guy go get it. Now, again, that's the nature of the game. There aren't a lot of teams that are playing zero coverage where they leave the middle of the field open and are susceptible to the post. But the threat of that vertical is enough to create space underneath, and that's why you need those kind of
Jeff, guys. Let's move on to another piece of news from the past few days. Le'Veon Bell has signed his franchise tender with the Pittsburgh Steelers and reports for duty, so he will be in action at the Cleveland Browns in week one. He did admit to being a little bit winded after his first couple of practices back. Is there any reason to worry here? Because it's not like the old days where you used to see players so often hold out and then they come in and then they get injured early in the season. I know guys work out on their own now, but can he handle a full load on opening day?
Let me tell you something. The reason they have so many what are referred to as soft tissue injuries, muscle pulls today, is the fact that you can't, I don't care where you go, who you hire, all that stuff, all these personal trainers, all this stuff, football is football. And you can't replicate the football movements in those types of workouts. You just can't do it, because in football, it's all reactive, right? So, for example, I see guys running around cones and doing all this stuff. Well, your body knows when you can focus on a cone, let's say, where you're going to make a cut. Well, your body knows that it's going to make that cut is coming,
right?
Because you got a visual on the field. What happens in a game is now the visuals are all moving, right? So those cuts come instantaneously. And I think that's one of the reasons why you see so many hamstrings, ACL, those kinds of injuries, because guys, you can't replicate the moves of football unless you play football.
Right.
And so I just really think that, and I heard, you know, it's awesome you brought this up, because I heard this yesterday, that he didn't want to come to training camp because he doesn't like training camp. And so I hope this isn't the wave of the future where guys, where it's like the NBA, guys basically, if you're a big enough star, you basically do whatever you want to do. Because, you know, they're willing to pay the fine to not be in camp because they don't want to be in camp. And that's a real slippery slope. I'm just telling you, that's a really slippery slope. And you know, is it going to hurt the Steelers? I don't know. But I can't say significantly, but it certainly doesn't help them. And it really doesn't help your football team.
And he is a player that they rely on heavily, Jeff. They will load up Le'Veon Bell's workload. He had 157 yards from scrimmage last season, which was the third most in NFL history. So he's going to get his touches as a runner. He's going to get his touches as a receiver. And yeah, maybe it's just me being overly pessimistic. I just would worry about a heavy workload right out the gate.
Well, you look at what they did with him down the stretch last year, Neil, and he's getting 30 touches a game.
Right.
So, you know, you're talking about now going from, and again, I don't care who he's got training him. You know, you're going from that environment right into the season. And now I think that it's really important for the Steelers, you know, and Todd Haley, that they monitor, basically put him on a, you know, in baseball they call it a pitch count.
Yeah.
The number of pitches, the number of throws a pitcher's going to get, right, because they're trying to protect his arm. I think they need to have that same thing, kind of a pitch count for Le'Veon Bell, how many touches they're going to really give him and how they're going to get those touches to him.
Well, and then we see if they really do like this Connor kid that they've been talking about all through the preseason because they were trying to get Le'Veon Bell into camp.
Yeah, well, a lot of that's going to be interesting to see how much of that was just, you know, as the vaunted president of the United States with the bad hair says, fake news, you know, because, I mean, come on, stop it. This kid ain't Le'Veon Bell, and you can talk all you want about how great he is, but Le'Veon Bell knows. I mean, you're not fooling those guys.
Right.
I'm telling you now. So, you know, again, I think that's all disinformation, if you will, and you know, I'm sure that there was a lot of high-fiving going on in that coach's office and the general manager's office when Le'Veon Bell decided he was going to sign that franchise tender.
And not a lot of high-fiving going on for TJ Ward with the Denver Broncos because he got released by the Broncos. He was a key part of that Super Bowl 50 winning defense. And there was some kind of unrest among some of the other defensive backs on that no-fly zone Denver defense. They weren't happy to see TJ Ward leave in town. He was released by the Broncos. He signed a one-year deal with Tampa Bay, which could be worth up to $5 million. Jeff, this is just, I think teams have that. You talk about it. They have a view of players. They are ascending, they're plateaued, or they're descending. And clearly the Broncos felt like he was on the wrong side of that equation. And they were looking to try and trade him. And when that didn't happen, it was obvious they were going to let him go.
Well, you know, there are a couple factors at play here. Number one is his age. Mm-hmm. Number two, he was a four and change million guy on, you know, in the cap. They had drafted two young safeties in the last couple of years that they really wanted to see play and they think are better cover guys than TJ Ward. Here's where the battle rages kind of between the locker room and the personnel department. TJ Ward, and I was just in Denver and you know, saw them play their last preseason game and talked to some guys. TJ Ward is a favorite in that locker room. And T.J. Ward was a fixture in that defense. And he was a guy that, you know, I wouldn't say he was like a defensive captain, but, you know, when you see Von Miller stand up for him when the news got out that they were shopping him, and Von says, I hope that's fake news, I think that says an awful lot. This is going to be really interesting because what the Broncos have done with this move is they've kind of cut some of the old out, taken a little bit of weight away, right? And push their young kids into the spotlight. Now you go out and you bring back Osweiler. There were a lot of guys on that football team weren't real happy with Brock Osweiler when he left and went to Houston. They felt like he turned their back on him. So I'm really interested to see what happens with those Broncos.
Well, yeah, Brock Osweiler's back. And as you said, in 2016, I think the Broncos put a reported $14 million per year on the table for Brock to remain a Bronco. He left town and went to Houston for $16 million a year. He's now back in Denver playing under the league minimum for 1 year. He said, being back in Denver is one of the top 5 days of my life. That was the quote. I'd guess one of the other top five would be when he left Denver in the first place for all that cash, Jeff, because he's probably not ever going to see that kind of money again.
Well, let me just say this, Neil. There's been, what, six? We had one season after he left?
Yeah.
Right? Well, in the way they pay in the NFL, you get paid. You have to be paid within 48 hours of the game, right? Mm. So that would be 60. He's had, well, you got the signing bonuses one day, and then you got 16 paydays last year. He's had some pretty good days in his life.
That's 16 right there. Throw in a couple of decent holidays and probably got married. I mean, crikey.
Oh, my God. That's good, like we always say. It's good work if you can get it.
Jeff, actually, just pull you up, because and it's interesting because you can take us inside the locker room. You're right that there are we Broncos that are unhappy with how he left town. And there were. They actually called him out, didn't they? I remember at the time they called him out on it.
But
that was surprising to me to some degree, because often players don't get in the way of another player getting their money, and they never seem to begrudge that business side of it. But there was some, wasn't there, with the Broncos now, thinking back on that?
Yeah, absolutely. There were a lot of guys, I wouldn't say a lot, and that's a little strong. I would say there were a number of guys that were vocal about it. And again, felt like he had turned his back on them. And, again, I saw a little video clip the other day that was priceless. Do you remember the incident where Peyton went back in the game?
Yes.
And Osweiler anticipated that it was his turn to go play.
Yeah,
and then it wasn't a sideline rant or anything, but it was just, his body language said all the wrong things.
Yep.
I guess they say time heals all wounds. And I think what also heals a lot of wounds is when you have a need. And right now with Paxton Lynch down, they knew that they couldn't go into the season with just Simeon and Sluter. That just can't do it. And, so for them, it makes sense. It's kind of a unique deal. It's like you say, they had almost $15 million on the table 2 years ago or 18 months ago or whatever it was. He pushed that away, and now they get him for the league minimum, which is, what, $775, I think, this year?
So that's right.
John Elway did some, shopping at the thrift store.
Jeff, I think that was telling in John Elway's quotes about re-signing Brock Osweiler. He was quick to mention Paxton Lynch and that situation, which almost gave the impression, and maybe I'm reading too much between the lines, but it gave the impression that this is because there's a pressing need, and who knows, when Paxton Lynch is healthy again, they can now move on from Brock Osweiler very easily as a league minimum player.
Well, these are the things I know, all right? Paxton Lynch has a lot of ability, right? But there are some questions about his, I wouldn't say attitude, Neil, but basically when he found out that he wasn't going to be the starter last year, there were some questions, and I've heard this from the inside, his work habits after he found out he wasn't going to be the starter. I think he's not come along as fast as the Broncos would like to see him come along. So I think this is a little bit of a warning shot across his bow, too, that, hey, listen, just because you're a second-round draft pick doesn't mean that you're somehow, you're not anointed as the next guy. We're going to do whatever we need to do to win football games, and if that means bringing back a guy who, frankly, started 7 games with 5-2 as a starter, so he's done a lot more than you have for the organization. So you better get your, stuff in order.
Thanks for saying stuff, Jeff.
I'm getting better at that. We don't have to have a 5-second delay on it anymore. But you look at it and it's amazing, because the Sluter kid had a great camp. I mean, a great camp, and looked like he was a guy. Well, to to make room. They had hoped to bring him back on the practice squad. To make room for him, you got to cut him first to get him on the practice squad. Minnesota picked him up, and he's in Minnesota now. So it's, again, another opportunity for another player. And it's all about opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. So, and being in the right place at the right time, and when your chance comes, taking it. Let's look at – I'm loath to talk too much about Ezekiel Elliott, Jeff, because it's fast-moving, and by the time we record this podcast, things will have moved on. Harold Henderson is hearing the appeal, and he still hasn't made his ruling on the initial appeal. There was a 6-game suspension for Ezekiel Elliott. Elliott appealed. Harold Henderson has yet to rule on that. In the meantime, Ezekiel Elliott has filed a lawsuit, kind of stopping the NFL from suspending him, and the NFL filed a counter lawsuit. I mean, that's just saying that has made my head hurt. But do you feel like this might be Deflategate Part 2 and it's going to rumble on, Jeff?
I think this is a really interesting deal because here's what I think. I think he's going to play. I think he's going to play.
Yes.
And I think he may not be suspended at all. Because here's the issue that the players are telling me, Neil, is that they don't have any problem. The reality of the situation is right now, in terms of the discipline power in the league, there are less than 20 players right now suspended for whatever,
yep.
Right? Whether it's drugs or whatever. So you're talking about 1.3% of the total NFL population, the players, right? So it's not like the players are saying, we don't want the rules, or we don't want the suspensions and those things. It's just such a small population that has to work with it. What they're concerned about is, where their frustration is, where they think that the commissioner has overstepped his bounds, is when the NFL gets into the investigation business, because the players think that that's best done by law enforcement, and that there's no need for the commissioner or the National Football League to be investigating, people's lives and players' lives. And I think that's where the rub is right now with the players. Me personally, again, I think he's going to play, and I think it's going to be real hard because, again, unless the NFL has some serious hard evidence, then it's going to be real hard for them to suspend him based upon he said, she said.
Yeah, and also he can delay tactics. Tom Brady eventually got hit by the NFL, but he delayed that Deflategate stuff. Ezekiel Elliott could end up playing all of this season and then facing some kind of suspension as the process plays out. We don't know how that's going to play out. Jeff, you take it to the next level, my friend. I'm glad you mentioned this because it's something I think about sometimes when you look at people talk all the time about, why did the players give up so much power to the commissioner? And, the power has gone to the commissioner and the players did nothing about it. That's got to be addressed in the next round of collective bargaining agreement talks. But not necessarily, because if you're the 99% of players that you just alluded to who don't get in trouble and don't end up suspended, do you want to give up 5% of overall league profits or whatever? When you go to the bargaining table and you want something, you give up something in return. They may have to give up a slice of the revenue pie, and do they really want to do that? So it's not a given that players, because everything is always, you see the narrative, it's like when they get to the table next time, there's no way the commissioner has this power. He might, because players might not feel that's worth fighting over.
Well, one thing that, there's a little saying that the players have all the time, hear them say is, don't fuss with, and I'm going to say fuss now, don't fuss with my money and don't fuss with my family. And so when I'm going to tell you, like you say, the 99 percentile, the guys that aren't suspended for weed or, punching their girlfriend, whatever it is, right? The 90% that we're talking about that, they look at this and they go, do you think we're going to give up some money for those knuckleheads? The knuckleheads are going to be knuckleheads. And, it doesn't make sense, right? So I think that there are a lot of things that they're going to fight for in this next round, and a lot of things that, that are way more important to them than giving up money to help, guys that are going to be knuckleheads.
Jeff, I'm glad you clarified that you said fuss then, because the line did go a bit funny just at that time. I did almost fall off my chair and think about, Nick Pike having to do a bit of editing to this podcast, but we're good. We're going to roll on. Jeff's cleaned up his act. It's because he's out of the locker room. Jeff, I want to pick you up on one thing you said last week. And you were talking about how it would be fun at some point to categorise the teams of the National Football League. And I think because we want to make our picks coming up in a couple of minutes, we won't do all of the categories that you kind of mentioned, you know, the also-rans, the strugglers and the contenders. But why don't you give us the teams that you genuinely feel have a Super Bowl chance in this coming season? So, because you go into every year and you wonder how many genuinely have a real chance.
Well, I mean, I think this is one of the beauties about this podcast and why it's so successful is I think that so much of it is just you and me just talking ball, right? So when I don't have a list for you, but I can give you some. If you say who's going to have a chance to be in the Super Bowl, or are we talking about who has a chance to win the Super Bowl? Because I think that even there's a delineation point in there. If you say got a chance to be in, I can give them to you right now as we go down through it. Kansas City.
Yeah, let's
Kansas
do
Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas City has a chance to get in the Super Bowl, yeah. Right? New England, I think, has a legitimate expectation, right? Now, again...
Yeah, anything less is a disappointment,
right? I know the guy in the hood in New England, he would screw up his face if I said that, but I think that's a team you got to say is a if you were given odds, it has strong odds. I think Pittsburgh should. I think Pittsburgh has the talent on that roster to be a 13-3 team, and I think has a legitimate Super Bowl shot.
Yep.
This may surprise you because I'm a Bruce Arians guy. I think the ship has sailed in Arizona. I think that they're going to be a good football team, but I don't think they're going to be a Super Bowl team. People talk about Houston. I just don't think Houston with Tom Savage has got a chance. Now, I heard a guy yesterday describe their young quarterback, Deshaun, as another Warren Moon. Ooh, you better pump your brakes on that one.
Yeah, give him a chance. Give the 21-year-old a chance to throw a pass.
Yeah, because don't compare a guy who's never completed a pass in the NFL to Hall of Famer. That's a little bit of a stretch to me. The Dolphins, Neil, that's a team that, I'm just telling you, I would give them a better chance than Houston because they got a better quarterback, right? And you know what? Here's the reality. Gase was so hard on Cutler when he was in Chicago that he's already, kind of set the bar, right? And I just really think that team, and everybody keeps telling me they're going to take a step back, tougher schedule, all that stuff. I like them. I think they got a shot. Seattle, I think, is the other team that I would say right now. If you ask me who's going to be in the Super Bowl, I'm going to tell you it's going to be New England and Seattle. I think the trade for Sheldon Richardson upgrades them. Russell Wilson, continues to develop. I like a lot about Seattle.
All right.
Giants, Neil, look, that roster, yes, right? The only place there's a question on that roster to me is the offensive line.
Right.
But I there's something about them. I just watched them in preseason. Too much drama with OBJ and all this and all that. I think the defense is outstanding at every level. The linebackers, you might say, they're not great linebackers, but they're in nickel all the time. So there's only two of them on the field. They got the best safety in the league, I think. Strong safety in the league, certainly, and they're good at corner, and they're awesome up front. They got three guys that get after you up front. So it just comes down to there's something about them that they just can't get excited about them. Dallas, depending on what happens with the running back. And, then you look Denver, I think is going to take a step back. And that hurts me to say it, but I really think that Denver might finish in that division third. And then you talk about Oakland. Well, until they can play defense in Oakland, you can't outscore everybody and win the Super Bowl. So those are the teams that I just in a loose, haphazard way of saying it, those are the teams I think.
All right. I'm going to try and help us compile a list here then, Jeff, because you did just mention Oakland there. You didn't mention Green Bay. So yes or no, Super Bowl chance?
They got it because of 12. And I think here's the other thing. I don't know how much ball Ahmad Brooks has got left in his game, right? But I thought that was a really good job of picking up a veteran that can help you, because they need linebacker help. That's one of the areas where they're a little bit deficient. He's played in the system because, you know, he's played it with Vic Fangio when Vic Fangio was the coordinator there. You know, again, that's the same system, same terminology that they play in Green Bay, so it's an easy transition for him. I think that was a good pickup. I just don't know, when you look at a running back like, you know, Ty Montgomery is your feature back, and he's got an 80 number on in the backfield. it reminds me a little bit of Pop Warner.
Yeah.
So I just don't, you know, again, I know that you got to be able to run the ball at some point, and right. I think that's been proven with those Packers. That, you know, you got to be able to run the ball, and I don't know if they, you know, found the answer there yet.
All right, so it looks like sorry, go on, Jeff.
All right, I tell you what. You give yours, and I'll tell you a team that has no shot. Right?
Okay, so you've got New England, Pittsburgh, and Kansas City as the serious contenders in the AFC. I would add Oakland to that mix. I would say Seattle, Green Bay. I still think Atlanta. I think their defense will be better over the coming season than how they finished last year. My Super Bowl, so you said New England and Seattle. My Super Bowl matchup would be Green Bay and New England, although I do really like Seattle. I think they're going to be there or thereabouts. Which team, I'm intrigued now, which team has no shot in your mind?
Well, you can start with the one in New York that doesn't wear blue.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think Buffalo, you know, they've basically told everybody in the world they're in a rebuilding mode. You know, they are trying to change. And I'm going to tell you something. I like what Sean's doing there. I like what, you know, Dean's doing there, the GM, because they're trying to change a culture. And that was kind of a, you know, they had some issues in that organization, and they're trying to, you know, do it the right way. I think the Bears are looking at 6 wins max.
Yep.
I think, let's go down through. You want to go down through Cleveland? Nope. Detroit? Nope.
Well, I don't want to list every team, Jeff, but I'm interested to see whether you actually are buying the Jacksonville rebuild under Doug Marone and Tom Coughlin, because, you know, every year we kind of get on the Jags bandwagon, and there's only so many years you can do that before you now say, all right, you're going to have to show me. And, you know, I go back to Blake Bortles, and it was quite telling in the last couple of days that he wasn't voted one of their team captains. I think when a quarterback isn't voted a team captain, that's pretty telling for a club. Are you happy that they're on the right track with Marone and Coughlin?
I'm going to tell you something. I'm glad you brought this up, Neil, because this is a fascinating one to me. Because of all of the stuff like that, where here's a guy that, your quarterback, unless he's a knucklehead or just can't play, he's going to be voted the captain because he's in the leadership role. Even though, you know, he's sitting in the, you know, driver's seat. Well, here's a kid, you know, now that should be right in the prime of his career. And there's a lot of questions about whether they're going to move on from it. The other thing that I think is really interesting is the power structure in Jacksonville. Who's in charge? Is it Caldwell? Is it Tom Coughlin?
Jeff,
where's Marone?
Jeff, let me just tell you from what I saw in Jacksonville, and it's only from watching from the sidelines. Doug Marone's coaching like a regular coach, you know, running drills, doing all of that stuff. Tom Coughlin is strolling around like he's a coach. You know, I even want to use the word prowling. He's prowling around behind Marone. He's having a little word in his ear and stuff. And I didn't see a lot of Dave Caldwell. And when you look at how close they are in terms of demeanor and football beliefs and personality, I feel like it's the kind of reporting structure goes Tom Coughlin, Doug Marone. Now, maybe I'm speaking out of turn and I don't know what I'm actually seeing, what goes on behind the scenes there, but it certainly makes you wonder about Dave Caldwell's role with the Jags now.
Well, I think that's exactly right. I think that the optics of it, and, you know, again, we're not sitting in the room,
right?
But the optics of it, certainly, and I've been around his business, Neil, for 30-some years, the optics of it are that Caldwell's getting muscled out, and, you know, you don't bring in Tom Coughlin, you know, if you're Mr. Khan, you don't bring in Tom Coughlin because you think you're on the right track. You bring him in because you think you need help. And that means what? That you're ex-head coach didn't get it done, and your GM who hired him isn't getting it done, and so you're bringing in these other guys to move in another direction. And again, I think your perception of how that Marone Coughlin fit works, and I think, you know, Doug is, he's going to add the toughness on a day-to-day level, a meeting-to-meeting level with, you know, with the staff and with the players, and then Tom is basically overseeing it and really, I think, making the moves and having the most influence. And here's again what I'm hearing, right, over here, is that it's now put up or shut up time for Bortles.
Oh, absolutely.
And I know, Scott Milanovich, who they hired as their quarterback coach, is a friend of mine. And Scotty coached in NFL Europe,
yep.
and it was head coach in the Canadian Football League, won a great cup up here. He's a really good, played quarterback for the Tampa Bay Bucs. He is a really good quarterback guy. And he was brought in not to help, you know, call plays or do any of that kind of stuff. He was brought in to fix broken mechanics in the quarterback. And, you know, I think I've seen evidence in preseason of Bortles being better fundamentally, but still he's got too many disaster throws. There was one throw early in training camp that just really, I was like, oh my God, he's kind of falling down and just throws one up and it gets picked. And I'm thinking to myself, that ain't going to fly in this new regime. And so I think for Blake, it's a big, big year.
Jeff, so we move on and make our picks for week one.
Let's do it.
All right, so we're going to start with the Thursday night game, which we'll have live on Sky Sports, the Kansas City Chiefs at the defending Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. Jeff, Andy Reid always has his team ready to play. They've got an opportunistic defense. They have one of the best tight ends in the NFL in Travis Kelce. According to general manager Brett Veach, Alex Smith is so far ahead of Patrick Mahomes at this stage that it's not even close. Do they have enough to go into Gillette Stadium and at least put the frighteners on the Patriots? Where are you going with this one?
Well, I think they have enough. I think they have enough, but I don't think they'll win the football game.
Right.
And I think what's going to be fascinating for me, Neil, is to see just what Andy does with Tariq Hill.
Yep.
Because what I'm hearing is that they're going to do everything they can to find as many ways as they can to get him touches, get him opportunities with the football. Because let's face it, he's their deep threat, if you will. And that may, when I'm talking about home run threat, I'm talking about he may catch a bubble screen and take it 8, right? He's got that kind of ability.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily just run a post route and beat everybody. So I think you're going to see some unique ways of getting him the ball in space particularly. But, you know, again, the Patriots are just so well coached and they adjust so well during the games. And, you know, they understand, you know, what they have to take away. And I just think going into New England is a real, real, you know, tall order for even a team as good as Kansas City.
Yeah, I'm going to go New England as well to win this one, to win the season opener. Jeff, I want to get your opinion on how the Patriots are going to attack defenses and not what we always talk about, which is Tom Brady and all of those passing game weapons. But you as a coach must be interested to see how they're going to rotate through Mike Gillisley, James White, Deion Lewis and Rex Burkhead in the backfield, because that's not a depth chart that I've just read out. Belichick will expect all of those to contribute, won't he?
Yeah, and you know how they are. There's a legendary college football coach by the name of Hayden Fry. And Hayden had his greatest success at Iowa. He turned that program around. And he's an old country guy from Texas. And he used to describe his offense as, well, we're going to scratch where it itches. Right? And I think that describes the Patriots offense perfectly. They're going to scratch where it itches. If you are going to load the box, they're going to throw it. If you're going to play too deep, they're going to throw it underneath. If you're going to play a skinny box or short numbers in the box, they'll run it. They'll do whatever they have to do to win the football game. And when you talk about Mike Gillisley and you talk about Rex Burkhead, those are guys that to me are perfect for the Patriots because they have unique skill sets and they are tough and they are unselfish and they are typical Patriot guys. So, again, I think what's going to be fascinating to me is see what the impact of these new guys outside is going to be to that passing game and who's going to fit in that slot receiver spot.
All right, let's move on to Sunday. Our first game to look at here is the Rebuilding Bowl. It's the New York Jets at the Buffalo Bills. So the Bills, they unloaded Sammy Watkins, Ronald Darby. We're looking at seeing if Tyrod Taylor is going to make it back from concussion. The Jets' losses this season, oh my goodness, have you got 10 minutes? David Harris, Brandon Marshall, Calvin Pryor, Darrell Revis, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Nick Mangold, Ryan Clady, Eric Decker, Geno Smith, just a few to name. Jeff, who are you liking in this? I'm probably just because it's at home and they've not given away quite so many of their players, I'm going to go Buffalo. What about you?
You know what? I'm going to go that way. But what was really interesting when you started going through that list of names for the Jets, what was the one thing about every one of those guys?
Well, there's a lot of older players, older guys
with big paychecks.
Yeah,
right. So they have really moved on now from all of those guys and know that their Super Bowl window is in the future. I think I like what Buffalo's doing, and I want to see. I heard Tyrod's practicing. I don't know if he's going to play in the game because of the concussion protocol thing, but this Nathan Peterman kid. Mm. That they have out of Pitt. There's a lot of good things being said about this kid. So, it'd be a fun thing to watch him play if he gets a chance to start the game. But I think Buffalo is better across the board right now than the Jets. And that ain't saying a whole lot, but I'll take Buffalo.
There's a compliment in there somewhere. You just got to really dig for it. Let's go to...
It's what we call a left-handed compliment right there to the Bills.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to... the Atlanta Falcons at the Chicago Bears. So we didn't, when you were looking at your contenders for this year, you didn't actually mention Atlanta a lot there. Can they bounce back? Because it's a horrible Super Bowl hangover at the best of times, but here's probably the worst Super Bowl hangover in NFL history. There was a lot of talk of it early in the offseason. Then Dan Quinn kind of put a lid on it and said, we're done with that and it's time to move on. I think they'll go to Chicago and win, but can they be true contenders this year?
I think they'll win in Chicago because I think the Bears are looking at a 6-win season max. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to tell you something. I just really think that's going to be hard, hard. You know, it's easy to say you put it behind you. But unless you had all 53 guys in therapy for the whole year, I'm not sure you're going to get that done. So, he may have put it behind him. And I know Dan Quinn's a really, progressive thinker and one of those – glasses half full guys, but I just think that's a lot for them to overcome. And then, again, there's still some questions about Atlanta in my mind, and I want to see if Matt Ryan is the real deal. I mean, he's had flashes before, and he had a great year last year. New coordinator, new system, lost some weapons. Let's just see on Atlanta.
All right, so we're both going Falcons in that one. Let's move on to the Baltimore Ravens at the Cincinnati Bengals. Looks like Joe Flacco is going to return at quarterback for Baltimore. Ravens' strength really looks like being defense, Jeff, at the moment. And they're going to go up against a Cincinnati attack that's got AJ Green back. It's going to have John Ross and Joe Mixon adding potential speed. Who do you like in this one?
Well, that's some stuff on for me because I agree with you. I think Baltimore's going to have as good a defense as they've had since the Ray Lewis days. Mm. I just don't know about Cincinnati's offensive line. And here we are talking about Cincinnati's offensive line. Yeah. A couple of years ago, that was the strength of their football team. But, they've lost a lot of those guys. And, I'm going to give the Bengals the nod because it's at home. And, in the NFL, you say it's a 3-point swing based upon being at home. And I just don't know if Baltimore can do enough offensively because they don't run the ball very well. And, Flacco's been on the shelf a little bit, so I'm going to take Cincy.
All right. I've got a new plan this year, Jeff, to not lose to you in these picks. So I wait and see what you say. And I'm going to go Cincinnati as well because you've coached 30 years of professional football and I haven't. So there we go. I'm going Bengals. Let's move on to the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Cleveland Browns. So... I'll actually, in the spirit of fair play, I'll go first and pick the Steelers.
I think this is going to be a little bit different than people think.
Yeah, so do I. I think the Browns are going to be improved this year, and I think they played Pittsburgh close last year.
Yeah, and they play Pittsburgh well. It's a big game opener at home. Deshaun Kizer, you know, Greg Williams and his new approach on defense, Joe Haden coming back. There's a lot of storylines in this one. I think Pittsburgh will win, but I think Cleveland's going to make it tough on them. And, you know, I think that this will be a really interesting test for Deshone Kizer, because, again, now it's for real, right? Mm-hmm. There's no more, you know, you're not playing against the second teamers. You look at that Pittsburgh front seven, and they got, I don't know how many first-round draft picks in there, and I'm going to say something, they are nasty. That Tua kid is on his way to being one of the really, really great ones inside that Pittsburgh's ever had, all the way back to Joe Green. So I'm going to take the Pittsburgh Steelers, but I think it's going to be a battle.
Jeff,
physical game.
Yeah, I didn't mention this to you last week when I was talking about my trip down to Tampa to watch the Browns against the Buccaneers, but, oh, look out for Myles Garrett. I don't want to get too sort of hyped up over one preseason game, but just looks so special coming around the edge, and he's kind of got that bend going on where he looks like he's laying half on his side going around the corner. He looked really, really good.
Well, I think that's going to be one of the great matchups of the game, Villanueva against him. You know, and it's interesting. You got a guy who's the number one pick in the draft going against a guy who went to the United States Military Academy and played receiver before he became an offensive lineman and was undrafted. And now what a matchup in the game. So that's going to be a fascinating one to me.
All right, let's move on to the Arizona Cardinals at the Detroit Lions. So you say Arizona's Super Bowl window is either shut or slamming shut. I'm going to tell you, Jeff, I'm going to pick them to win at Detroit against Matthew Stafford and his big new shiny contract. I quite like the Cardinals.
I think they're a good football team. I just don't, you know, again, you're talking about a guy in Carson Palmer who, can he stay healthy 16
yeah.
weeks? You know, is Drew Stanton good enough to win with if he doesn't stay healthy? Defensively, they're nasty. I mean, and you know, they've got some players. Johnson's one of the best players in the league that we probably don't talk about enough.
Yeah.
I'm going to take them, too, going into Detroit. I just don't know, can Detroit play any defense?
Yeah. And get a running game as well, which they haven't had in pretty much all of the time that Matthew Stafford's been there. So we're both going Arizona in that one. Jacksonville are at Houston. This is going to stay a game being played in Houston, Jeff. We know that Hurricane Harvey devastated that city. J.J. Watt has led a tremendous response. What was he? Last I looked up, over $13 million he's raised. Is it important for that city that this game remains in Houston and they're going to take on the Jags?
No question about it. And I'm going to tell you something. I just think from an emotional standpoint, with what those players have done, like DeAndre Hopkins related a story of a guy that he talked to who he had a boat, right? Just a boat, and was out saving people, you know, in the flood and the aftermath of the hurricane. And the guy was telling the story about his boat was full and there were voices inside the houses that were underwater screaming at, you know, crying for help, and he couldn't get back to him fast. I mean, these players, these Houston players, and I think this is an amazing thing that's gone on in Houston. J.J. Watt started it, but the Houston Texans have jumped in line, all of them. I'm talking about, you're not just talking about maybe the backup, you know, left
right.
tackle
right.
and, you know, the punter, and that's usually what happens when they send guys out to do community work. You're talking about the superstars are out in the community, not just out in the community having their picture taken. Neil, they have got their sleeves rolled up and they are helping. And I think this is going to be one of those things that's going to catapult the Texans. Now, I don't know if they're going to be a Super Bowl team, but I know right now in that city, there is an incredible bond being forged between that community and that football team. And I think this will be a great thing for Houston. I think they're going to beat Jacksonville by 15.
Yeah, I agree. I think they beat Jacksonville. I think it's going to be an emotional day for the Texans. Their defense is too good for Blake Bortles to handle. So both going Houston in that one. Our first game on Sky Sports on Sunday will be dependent on the path and rate that Hurricane Irma takes in South Florida, because we're scheduled to show the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Miami Dolphins. If that game gets moved up at all, then we will obviously slot in another game on Sky Sports. But for now, the Buccaneers at the Dolphins. Jeff, this is a tough one to call, but these are two feel-good teams from a year ago. Where are you going with this one? This is a really, really hard one for me to make a pick on.
Well, you know, again, I think there's some, again, a lot of fascinating storylines, and you know, again, for you guys to talk about before the game. You know, what's the impact of T.J. Ward going to be in you know, a week? You know, is Jameis going to be able to take that next step as a quarterback? You know, you watch the Hard Knocks and you see his leadership start to form. I think he's done a great job with that. Now, can he get away from the interceptions, which is the thing that I didn't like about him as a college quarterback, and I don't like about him, and I know Dirk Cutter doesn't like, you know, as an NFL quarterback. The fascinating thing to me about Tampa Bay, this is really now Dirk Cutter's team. One of the reasons I know it is, he loves tight ends. And I'm going to tell you something, Neil. They may dress five tight ends.
They kept five on the roster, didn't they? Yeah.
So, again, you look at that, and this is now Dirk's team. Defensively, they're a good, solid football team. You know, McCoy's one of the great ones in the league up front. But you look at the other side, and they got some pretty good guys on the other side of the, you know, for the Dolphins. I'm taking the Dolphins just because I think they got better overall football team.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Dolphins because they're at home. And there's a question in the mailbag from Tom Marshall who says, how many weeks will it take Dolphins fans to realize Jay Cutler is Jay Cutler? It's going to take at least two, Tom, so I'm back in the Dolphins for week one. Let's try and move through a couple of these a little bit quicker, Jeff, because I know we're banging on for time here at the moment. Oakland at Tennessee. These are two genuine contenders for the playoffs in the AFC. Two young quarterbacks in Derek Carr and Marcus Mariota both broke their legs on Christmas Eve last year. Which one returns best and which one returns with a winning start?
Tennessee, I think, will win the football game. I think both quarterbacks will play well. I just think that Tennessee has better defense.
All right, you're going Tennessee there. I'm going to go Oakland to win that one on the road. The Philadelphia Eagles at the Washington Redskins. I think Philadelphia, as you said last week, Jeff, they will be a team that surprises a few. But I don't think the Redskins are quite in the level of dysfunction that was portrayed early in this offseason. So I'm going to go Washington to win that one.
I'm going to go the other way. I think Philadelphia has improved. You know, I saw in the couple days I was down earlier, you know, and talked to Doug Peterson about Wentz. I think he's going to take the next step. I think Washington, frankly, Neil, is an 8-8 football team, and I just don't think they've replaced those receivers. You can't lose guys like that outside Jackson and Garcon and not, you know, not take a step back.
In just a few seconds, we will talk about the battle between the two highest-rated quarterbacks in NFL history. Aaron Rodgers is at number one. Russell Wilson is at number two all time. But first, let's talk Scott Tolzien and Jared Goff.
I know where you're going with this. I can't hear it. I've been around you enough. I know how you think, man.
The Colts at the Rams. I'm going to go Rams. It's got to be Rams at home with Tolzien at the helm and no Ryan Kelly at offensive line. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think this is going to be a Rams win. It's going to be an ugly football game. A lot of bad football played, but I think, you know, I just think that Indianapolis is just, without luck, they got no shot.
All right, so let's move on to Seattle at Green Bay then. This is going to be a fascinating one. Over the past 5 years, Jeff, this is what my pages of notes tell me so far. These are the top two teams in the NFC in terms of wins. They've played in three of the last four NFC Championship games. The Seahawks are your pick from the conference to reach the Super Bowl. The Packers are mine. This is a true heavyweight clash in week one.
Yeah, and I think even more intriguing to me is the dinner that'll be on Saturday night in Green Bay between Martellus and Michael Bennett.
Yeah.
I would pay to sit at that table. But, this is going to be interesting. I think Seattle's going to go in there and get it done. Now, who's going to be the running back, right? That's going to be the interesting thing to me. Who's going to be that feature back in Seattle? Because they have to run the football to have success.
I'm going to go the other way. I think Aaron Rodgers has now got an opportunity to sort of really show himself again against the top defense. I think he's won the last two or three against Seattle as well, kind of figured out that defense. Certainly going to be a tough one. But I'm going to go Green Bay because I think that they are, I think actually both these teams, I agree with you. I'm not going to shake my head at your Super Bowl pick. I think this could very easily be the NFC Championship game, couldn't it?
I think so. And I think what's going to be intriguing now is that, as you know, what kind of chemistry Rodgers has with Martellus. Because, you know, when they were really, really good on offense, the tight end was always a key part of that. And yeah. I think Martell's a unique talent. It'll be interesting to see how fast they can develop that chemistry.
All right, let's move on to Carolina at San Francisco. I'm going to go Panthers to win that one, although obviously there are going to be concerns about how well they can get Cam Newton back into the lineup.
Yeah, I'm going Carolina too. I think there's some good things happening in San Francisco again, but I just think Carolina has a better overall football team. Christian McCaffrey going back to the Bay Area where he played so well as a college player can be fun to watch.
Sunday Night Football, let's move on to that. And it's the Dallas Cowboys against their kryptonite from a year ago, the New York Giants. So Dallas lost just three regular season games last year. Two of those were against the Giants. Dak Prescott had a couple of his worst outings without trying to put too positive or negative a spin on it. They were some of his worst games against the New York Giants and that tough defense. This is a tough one to call, Jeff, until we know if Zeke's out there or not for the Cowboys, because that changes things massively for the Cowboys.
I agree with you, but I'm going to take the... Now, again, this is a little bit shaky for me, but I'm going to take the Giants, because when you look at the Cowboy defense, and, you know, again, regardless of all the drama, you know OBJ will be on the field, and he'll be playing, and, you know, it does... I don't even want to go down that road, but you got him... You got Brandon Marshall going to catch a bunch of football. You can say what you want about Brandon Marshall, but he's a productive guy. Now, he's got OBJ on outside of him, Shepard. I think that's going to be a nasty combination for the Cowboy defense, which, frankly, is, you know, if Marinelli is going to get it done, he's going to get it done with, you know, smoke and mirrors, because that's not a great roster on defense in Dallas. So I'm going to take the Giants.
Yeah, I'm going to go Giants as well. They lost... seven defensive players, then Randy Gregory is suspended for a year, David Irving for four games, DeMontre Moore for two games. They lost their entire secondary, so it's going to be a struggle for the Dallas Cowboys on that side of the ball. Let's move on to Monday Night Football. We've got two games on Monday Night Football, and they're both going to be on Sky Sports as well. First of all, the New Orleans Saints, led by Adrian Peterson. I'm sure they're going to be led by Drew Brees, but Adrian Peterson will play his part, and he heads back to Minneapolis, US Bank Stadium, to take on the Vikings. What a story.
I'm in Minneapolis right now as we speak. And the thing that I heard yesterday was Adrian said, I can't wait to stick it to the Vikings. So I think that's going to be a fascinating one. Now, again, I know there's a lot of players on defense that have very high regard for Adrian Peterson. But if you think our boy Dirty Harry doesn't want to stick it to Adrian Peterson.
Well, they do.
You better think again, because I'm going to say something. They did not play well at the end of the preseason on defense. And, you know, Harrison Smith came out and called his teammates out. I think Minnesota's going to win this, and I think it's going to be an incredibly physical game.
All right, you're going Minnesota. I just think Drew Brees is going to play a role in this. I'm going to take the Saints to pull off the upset on the road. But, Jeff, you're right about the Vikings want to have a shot at Adrian Peterson. Everson Griffin told me when I was out there in training camp, he said, do you know that guy always wore a red quarterback's jersey? We were never allowed to hit Adrian Peterson in practice. And now we get the time to do that and the chance to do that. And I went down to New Orleans and I told Adrian Peterson what Everson Griffin said. And Adrian Peterson just looked at me and went, that went both ways. I wasn't allowed to hit them either.
Hey, you know what's so funny about this? Adam Thielen said to me, he said, oh, you know, he was a great, and I'm sure he was a great teammate. I'm not debating that part of it, but this other part of it, I just looked at him and I smiled. He said, he ran so hard in practice. They never let anybody touch him.
No, he just ran around them in practice.
Oh, my goodness.
Last game then, Jeff, as we wrap up here, the Los Angeles Chargers. I'm not putting a pound in the pot. It's the Los Angeles Chargers at the Denver Broncos. You mentioned the Broncos potentially taking a step back. There's no Shane Ray for the early part of the season for the Broncos, which could be significant. I like the Chargers to be a sneaky good team this year. What do you think?
If they can stay healthy, I think they've got a chance. You know, I think it's going to be the matchup here that fascinates me the most is, you know, everybody talks about the improvement of the offensive line in Denver. Well, your two new tackles, Menelik on the right side and the young kid that they drafted out of Utah on the left side are going to face two really good edge rushers. And I think that's going to be an interesting deal to see how they hold up. And I, to be honest with you, Neil, I can't think of the kid's name right now, the left tackle in Denver.
Garrett Bowles.
He's had a good camp, but he has also shown – one of the things that was concerned about him was – and this is what I heard in Denver was that, you know, he has a tendency to be so emotional. He's a little bit like Tyler Lewan, right? He's going to get out of – if you talk trash to him and you can get him out of his game. And I think he and that matchup against Joey Bosa is going to be a fascinating one for me.
I'm going to take Chargers on the road, Jeff. What about you?
I don't have to say Denver at home, but, again, I would not be surprised if the Chargers won football.
All right, good stuff. We have gone on quite a while here, so I'm just going to take one question out of the mailbag to finish off, and it's a good one from Jonathan Pickering, who says, Jeff, how important is getting a win in the first week to breed confidence for the season ahead? This is always a fascinating one to me, Jeff, because obviously you want to get out the gates fast and start fast, but only half the teams are going to win in week one, and the rest can't just pack up the tent and go home. So is it important? Does it breed confidence? But is it the end of the world if you lose?
Well, I think it's really important for a number of teams because you look at these games, Neil, and when you go through it, you see Baltimore at Cincinnati, Pittsburgh at Cleveland. You go down and you see, obviously we talked about Seattle and Green Bay, the Giants and Dallas. There's big divisional
games. Seven division games in week one.
Those are huge because you can live with a loss in the first one, particularly if it's on the road and it's not a divisional game, but you lose a divisional game, that's one you can't get back. You understand what I'm saying? I think those divisional games are really, really important early.
All right. We will look forward to it all unfolding. This is where the season begins. We thank everyone for joining us on Inside the Huddle. It's going to be a lot of fun, Jeff. It's always a lot of twists and turns and drama. It's just a great soap opera, isn't it, the NFL season?
We got 4 months, I guess it is, of some of the best entertainment you can ever have. And, I mean, the NFL is, you know, the greatest game in the world. And thank goodness we get a chance to cover it a little bit.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hear, hear. That's a good way to end for now. So until next week when we will break down everything that happened in week one, we'll take out all the big talking points for opening weekend, dig into some of those, and look ahead to week two. Until then, enjoy the coverage coming your way. We've got 6 live games on Sky Sports from Thursday onwards. Enjoy that. Enjoy the season. Until next week, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.